Good Rach, thank you all for coming.
Birshus Beras.
I'm very honored to have the privilege of addressing you tonight. I was taken by surprise when your president called me and gave me this opportunity to speak, and I'm just very privileged to be here, so thank you all very much. This past week's parsha, Nitzav Vayelech, Moshe Rabbeinu starts off by saying to Bnei Yisrael, Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Elokeichem. You're all gathered here today, standing before Hashem. And in the Sefer Karban Ha'ani, he points out something very interesting. He says that this is in fact a critique of Bnei Yisrael by Moshe Rabbeinu, saying to Bnei Yisrael that you're standing still, you've become complacent. You're no longer looking to grow, no longer looking to move forward. And he contrasts this with Moshe Rabbeinu, who's described in Parshas Vayelech in this week's Parsha, on the last day of his life, Vayelech Moshe, he's still a holy, he's still looking to grow. And it's our job as Jews to always look to grow, looking for opportunities to do more. What can I do to do more? To do more today than I did yesterday. The Pasuk in Zechariah says, V'nasati lecha mahalchim b'na omdim ha'ela, describing the difference between a human being and a malach. Malachim are called omdim. Malachim stand still. Their level is set. There's no room for growth. But us, as human beings, our goal as the Jewish people is always to look to grow, looking for opportunities to do more. And it's in this vein that the Gra writes in Mishlei, Ha'adam nikra holich, shetzarech leilich tamid midarga ledarga. As human beings, that's our goal, to go from level to level. And there's really no middle option. We're either ascending or we're descending. V'im lo yala lamala yerid mata mata. If we're not going up, so then we're going down. And those are the two options that we have before us. Tonight happens to be the yard site of the great Rav Yecheskel Abramsky. He was a very well-known Rav. He was based in London for many years. And when he was publishing his classic work, the Chazon Yecheskel, on the Tosefta, so originally he was publishing it very quickly. And a great rabbi told him at the time, he said, you got to slow down. Why? Because if you finish your tafkid in this world, if you do everything so quickly, so then you're never going to be able to, then once your tafkid has been accomplished, once you've used up your purpose in this world, so, you know, God forbid that could be the end for you. So he told him, slow down, take it slow. As long as a Jew is constantly doing something, looking to do more, so then they have a purpose in this world. There was Hasidus Sharov, who was very ill and weak his entire life. And at the end of his life, he had lived a tremendously long life, and people asked him, you know, what was it that caused you to merit to live such a long life? So he explained that every time he finished doing something, a project that he was working on, he decided, I'm going to take on something new right away. He knew as long as I'm constantly involved in Avodas Hashem, looking to do more, so he knew that he had a purpose in this world. He knew that he'd be able to live a long life. And despite being weak and ill his entire life, so in fact he did. He lived a very long life. And that has to be our Hashkafas HaChaim as Jews, looking to grow, looking to always do more. And it's very appropriate that it's Moshe Rabbeinu who's telling this to Bnei Yisrael. After all, Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate doer, the ultimate person who was looking to grow, looking for more opportunities. The Gemara describes in Maseches Makos how Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to set up the Ari Mikla. We know the cities of refuge that protect the person who kills by accident, the person who murders the Shogeg. So there were six primary cities, three in Eretz Yisrael, three on the other side of the Jordan River. And Moshe Rabbeinu set up the three that he could, knowing full well that he was never going to get into Eretz Yisrael, never being able to finish the job, and knowing full well that all six don't take effect. They don't protect the person who runs to the city of refuge until all six are set up. He knew he could only do half the mitzvah, and yet the Gemara says, mitzvah bali adai v'akaimena. A portion of a mitzvah has come to my hand, so I'll do what I can. I'll do the little bit that I can. The Gemara also describes how Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to get into Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara says not to eat from its delicious fruit, not to enjoy its plentiful land and the beautiful hills and the beautiful waters of Eretz Yisrael, but he wanted to get to Eretz Yisrael simply to be able to do more mitzvot in the land. And that has to be our goal as the Jewish people. We have to strive, always looking for opportunities. What can I do to do a little more today than I did yesterday? Moshe Rabbeinu was certainly not the first person to live in this way. Avram Avinu, we know, who is the ultimate example of chesed. His home was always open to all. So the Gemara describes that Avram Avinu, although he was before Matan Torah, Avram Avinu kept all of the mitzvot. So much so, the Gemara says, that he even kept the mitzvot derabanan. He kept Erev Tav Shilin. So the Mefarshim asks, what's special about Erev Tav Shilin? You could say Avram kept any of the mitzvahs. You want to highlight the fact that he kept the mitzvah derabanan. Why did the Gemara select Erev Tav Shilin as the ultimate example? So we know that part of the idea of being able to cook either from Shabbos, or from Yom Tov to Shabbos rather, is the principle of Hoel. Hoel means that since maybe a guest will show up in my house on Yom Tov itself, so therefore the food that I'm preparing now isn't really for Shabbos. The Erev Tavshilin is kind of like a after-the-fact idea to allow us to do this. But the fact that a guest might show up now allows me to cook now, saying, well, if a guest shows up, then the food will be for now. So what about Avram Avinu? Avram Avinu, there was no doubt in anyone's mind that a guest was going to show up. Avram Avinu was a level beyond that. Avram, he was the ultimate Ish Chesed. His home was always open. He constantly had guests. And therefore, he didn't even need the Erev Tavshilin. Yet, we find that the Gemara says he still did it. Why would he do it? He did it because of his love for mitzvahs. That's how far his love for mitzvahs went, that he was doing mitzvahs that he wasn't even obligated in. Mitzvahs that didn't even make sense according to the way he lived his life. But that's who we are as the Jewish people. There's a famous story we know. The Gra, the Vilna Gaon on his deathbed, was holding on to his tzitzis, crying, and saying, you know, when I leave this world, in this world, I'm able to fulfill this mitzvah for a few dollars, for a few pennies. And in the next world, all the money in the world, nothing I could do will be able to allow me to fulfill this mitzvah. Because this is the world where we have the opportunity to do. I once, about a year ago, I was in Muncie for Shabbos, and I heard someone say that the Vizhnitsa Rebbe, I don't know which Vizhnitsa Rebbe he was referring to, but the Vizhnitsa Rebbe, one night, it was the last opportunity to say Kiddush Levana. It was a cloudy night, I guess, here in New York. So he hired a helicopter to fly to Boston to be able to say Kiddush Levana. That's who we are. This is who the Jewish people are. We're the type of people who look for opportunities, sometimes in crazy ways, seemingly crazy ways, but that's who we are. We strive to do mitzvahs. I also once read a beautiful story from the Holocaust. There was a man who had been separated from his friend for a number of months, and he finally saw his friend. They had been reunited in one of the camps, and he sees him, and it was a dark night, and he said, Herschel, is that you? He wasn't sure, and he was so excited to see his friend. And the first thing he says, Herschel, I just want to remind you that tomorrow night's the last opportunity to say Kiddush Levana. Because that's who the Jewish people are. We're constantly thinking about God. We're constantly worried, what can I be doing now to serve Hashem? And this idea, again, goes back to this idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling Bnei Yisrael in this week's parsha. Tem nitzavim ayom. You're standing still, you've become complacent. You have to find ways to motivate yourself. I'm not going to be here forever. You're about to cross into Eretz Yisrael. It's time for us to wake up. And it's obviously a fitting message for us here as we begin to say Slichos tonight, that we're in the time of the year where we need to say to ourselves, what can I do to do a little bit more? I once read that the Lubavitch Rebbe on his 70th birthday decided that in honor of turning 70, he was going to set a new goal for himself. Most people at the age of 70, you figure they're slowing down a little bit, taking it a little more easy. Lubavitch Rebbe decided, now that I'm 70, this year I'm going to open 70 Torah institutions. That's my goal for the year. Needless to say, he surpassed his goal. Because, again, this is who the Jewish people are. We look for opportunities to do more. We don't slow down. We're always trying to do a little bit more. Even those of us who sometimes feel like we're not ready to do a little bit more, at the very least, we have a desire to do more. Even if I say, well, that's not for me, I'm not ready to take that on, at the very least, we appreciate the idea of wanting to do more. We know when Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Hashem and he says, with what name should I tell Bnei Yisrael? And Bnei Yisrael in the time says, what name should I tell them? What name is going to be the name of God that I signal to Bnei Yisrael that the redemption is here? So Hashem says, my name is Eka. So what does the name Eka mean? Eka means I will be. So the Svarim explained that this is the name of Tshuva. This is the name of Hashem that personifies Tshuva. How so? Because Eka is what I will be. I'm not there yet, but this is what I want to be. This is who I hope to be in the coming year. This is what I strive to be. And the Imre Emes takes it a step further. Hashem actually says to Moshe, Eka Asher Eka. I will be what I will be. That is to say that even if we don't actually even have the desire yet, I will be what I will be. Meaning I want to be. I appreciate those people who want to be, and at least I want to be amongst those who want to be. At least I want to have the desire to desire, at the very least. Right, we call Shal Shudis in the Svarim HaKadoshim, Shal Shudis is called Rava Deravin, the desire of desires. Because it's the time of Shabbos where we have to ask ourselves, do I desire to gain a closeness to God? And if not, do I at least desire to have that desire? Am I ready to even want it? And that's something that is certainly an appropriate message for us in these times. In the Yom Naram, we say, V'chol ma'aminim shehu dayan emes, ha'chogoy ve'eka asher eka. We use this name when we refer to Hashem in the Yom Naram, because that's exactly what we're saying. We're saying, eka asher eka, this is who I want to be. And if I don't feel like I even want to be, well, at least I want to be the type of person who desires that closeness to God. There's a lot of great stories that highlight this idea, the importance of wanting. There's a story with the great Rav of Eisel Charif. So he was known to be a tremendous Talmudist, as well as a very very exciting person. He had known for his quick one-liners and a very sharp witticism. So he decided he was going to search for a son-in-law. So a well-known story, I'm sure some of you have heard it before. So he decided to search for a son-in-law. So he's going from town to town. He has this phenomenal question, this very deep question. And he says, whoever can solve this question, this deep Talmudic question, so that's going to be the one who's my son-in-law. So he goes from town to town, and different boys in the different yeshivas give answers, trying to solve this great question of this great Gaon, and no one comes up with the answer. He comes to one town, the boys gather around, everyone's giving answers. No, okay, I guess my son-in-law is not meant to come from this town. So he's about to pack up, he's getting in his wagon, heading out of town, and all of a sudden he sees one of the boys running behind him. So he quickly stops the wagon, and he says, yes, do you have an answer? I hear you're ready to solve it, you're ready to become my son-in-law? And he says, no, the truth is, the question's way above my head. But I want to know the answer. At the very least, I want to know the answer. And he decided, he said, oh, this is the person I want to be my son-in-law. The person who wants it, the person who's interested, the person who has the drive. If we're not ready to do it, at least we want to do it. There's also a story with Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mashkiach of Mir, he once went to visit his uncle, Rav Avram Yafin, in Novardik. So he arrives in Novardik, and he's walking around the yeshiva with his uncle, and his uncle's pointing out the different boys in the yeshiva, and he says, who's the top guy in the yeshiva? So he says, well, this guy, he has phenomenal bekiyas. He just knows everything. And this guy, he's a big Baal Machadish. He always has tremendous new insights. And he's going around, and this guy's this. So he says, okay, so who's the top guy? Just to pick one guy, who's the top guy? He says, oh, let me show you. Takes him into a side room, and there's a guy sitting there by a shtender, and he says, this is the top guy. So he says, what's so special about this guy? You showed me this guy is brilliant, and this guy is, he told me about all the different milas of all the different boys in the yeshiva. What's so special about this guy? He said, this student, he's the biggest mavakesh. He's the one who wants it the most. He's the one who will be the most famous one day. And that student became the renowned Stipler Gaon. Because the person who wants it, the person who has the drive to succeed, that's the person who's going to get there one day. So we're gathered here tonight. It's late at night. It's not easy to be out learning Torah at this hour. And the Gemara tells us that a person who learns Torah at night, Hashem promises that person a special chut shel chesed bayom, a special strand of kindness by day. A person who makes that commitment at night, so Hashem will reward them even during the day to make sure that they're able to go about their day. So the Ben Yishchai explains it the following mashal. He says, imagine two people who bring a gift to the king. And they each decide to bring fruit baskets. They bring these massive baskets of fruit, full with the most beautiful fruit in the world. One guy brings a basket, it's full to the top, to the tippy top. The other guy, he brings a basket, also full to the top, but he puts a few extra grapes dangling out over the top of the basket. So he brings it to the king, the first guy walks in, he brings his basket, the king is very impressed, and he says, okay, he calls in the royal chef, and he says, I want you to weigh out the different fruits in this basket, the watermelon, the pineapple, everything, weigh it all out, figure out exactly what it costs. Figures it out, $53.75, writes the guy a check, he pays him back for it. Second guy comes in with the fruit basket, exact same basket with just a few extra grapes hanging over the top, and the king takes out his checkbook and he writes the guy a check for $1,000,000. So the other guy, the first guy was all upset, he said, I don't understand. His basket weighed 10 pounds, sorry, his basket weighed 10.1 pounds, my basket weighed 10 pounds, I got $50, he got $1,000,000, what's going on here? So he says, I paid you according to your desire. He showed me, you showed me, right? You filled it to the top. You showed me that's what you were happy with, it just being full to the top. So I paid you for exactly what you gave me. But this second individual who filled the basket up with a little bit more, just hanging over the top, showed me that had he had a bigger basket, he would have filled that even more. He showed through his desire that he wanted to do even beyond what his means were. And therefore I'm paying him for his full ability, what he desired to do. So says the Ben Yishchai, that's the idea. When the Gemara says, a person who learns Torah at night, a person comes home from a long day at work, a person comes home from a long, whatever, Shabbos, and they sit down, and they say, you know what, I'm going to learn, or I'm going to go be Mavakar Chola, I'm going to go find some chesed to do. That person, Hashem gives them an extra special protection by day, an extra special kindness by day, because that person has to be paid for what they desire to do. And by showing Hashem that you're willing to make that extra push, so you show Hashem that you're the person who deserves a little bit more. So we see that we want to do. We see that there's an idea of doing. So what does it take to really do? Well, right, so let's suggest a few ideas of how one can find things in everyday life where one's able to elevate everyday life to do things in a way that it becomes more of a Torah approach if I just change my mindset slightly. I'd like to start with the following story. Shalom Shadron, the famed Maggid of Yerushalayim, once one of his children were sick, and he was taking the other children to his mother so that they shouldn't become sick as well. So he's walking down the street with his children behind him, and he runs into the famous Lubavitcher Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Isaac Scher. He says, "Oh, Rav Shalom, where are you going?" He says, "I'm taking my children to my mother. One of my other children is at home. He's sick, and I don't want the other children to get sick." So he says, "Okay, so Rav Shalom, so what are you doing?" He says, "I just told you what I'm doing. I'm taking my children to my mother so that they don't get sick from my other child." So he says, "Oh, I see. So the big animal is leading the small animals." So Rav Shalom was taken by surprise. He says, saw the Rosh Yeshiva was trying to tell him something. He said, "In the animal kingdom, so the parent animals also care about the children animals." He says, "Is that all you're doing? Are you no different?" He said, "Rav Shalom, you're doing chesed. You don't realize, Rav Shalom, you think that, oh, I'm just taking my children. You don't have to realize that doing chesed with your family is also chesed. It's also a mitzvah." And he said from that moment on, his life was changed. He said he never looked at his family the same way. He never looked at the things that he went through every single day. He looked at them in a whole new light. He was one time, he was walking with Rabbi Eliyahu Lopian, and they saw someone working in the streets of Yerushalayim. An irreligious Jew working on the streets of Yerushalayim, fixing the streets. So Rabbi Eliyahu Lopian turned to him. He said, "This guy is involved in mitzvahs all day. He's hammering away, he's fixing the streets. He's involved in Yishuv Eretz Yisrael literally all day. You know, the only thing that's lacking is his kavana. He's not, mentally, he's not there. He doesn't view it as a mitzvah. So unfortunately, he's going to get the Shemayim, and he's not going to be able to be paid for his intent. Because to him, it's not a mitzvah." And I think this is a very important idea. When we take this message out, when we realize that there's so many things that we do every single day, and if we just approach it as a slightly different kavana and realize that this is an opportunity to serve God, so then we can elevate the most mundane things in life. There's a story that when the Satmar Rebbe passed away, so the Rebbe who took over after him, the Segedah Rebbe, so he came up to Muncie to visit Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, who was the oldest Lithuanian Rosh Yeshiva of the time, and he came in with his whole troop of Hasidim. They're all interested to see how is this renowned Lithuanian sage going to interact with the new Hasidus Rebbe. So they came in, the Hasidim came in, they piled into Rav Yaakov's house, and they start pushing towards the front of the table, and Rav Yaakov, who is not accustomed to such pushy people, he decided that, you know, we're going to do things a little more orderly, and he said, "There's chairs in the basement, everyone go get a chair, find a seat, everyone settle in." So one by one, the Hasidim went down to the basement, brought up one chair, came back up. Next guy went down, brought up one chair, came back up. Rav Yaakov couldn't take it anymore. He said, "What's going on here?" He says, "You go downstairs, you bring up one chair, so you're a schlepper." He says, "If you go downstairs, you bring up two chairs, so then you're a Baal Chesed." Right? The difference between, either way, you're going to do it. So you might as well turn it into a Chesed. But just today, I was by Rabbi Ephraim Waxman on the other side of Muncie. And he gives a Pirkei Avos shiur. It was the last shiur of the season. And afterwards, I daven mincha. So I took a sitter off the shelf. And I sat down with the chumash. I figured I had a few minutes before the shiur began. So I'm sitting there with my chumash in front of me. And I put the sitter off to the side of the table. And about a minute or two after I started learning, I pulled the sitter a little bit closer. As if, you know, make sure no one steals my sitter before mincha. And I started thinking to myself, what am I, crazy? I should put the sitter down. I should put it on the edge of the table. I should think, maybe someone will steal my sitter, and I'll have the opportunity to do the chesed. I said, here I am, I'm about to speak tonight about the importance of finding chesed in everyday thing, and here I am, as if there's no sitter. There's a whole shelf full of sitter, and I'm here grabbing onto this artificial sitter as if it's the only sitter in the world. So what happened? So after the shiur, I got up for a second, and someone stole my sitter. And I was so happy. It was the greatest chesed I ever did in my life. I never did chesed with that type of kavanah before. Because that's what it's all about. When you take something that we're going to do anyways, and you just approach it slightly different. You put a little more kavanah into it. You look at it from a Torah perspective, so the whole mitzvah changes. Tonight also happens to be the yard site of the Chafetz Chaim. The 24th of Elul, Chafetz Chaim was nifter in 1933. And the very last sefer that he wrote in his life was a kitzer sefer on mitzvahs, where he wrote just quickly, in short paragraphs, the mitzvahs that apply bizman and zeh, mitzvahs asay, the mitzvahs lo asay. And in the preface to the English edition that they put out, so the editor writes how the Chafetz Chaim used to always complain about this idea, how people miss out on so many opportunities. Could be this is why he wrote this sefer at the end of his life. People miss out on so many opportunities just because they don't realize it's a mitzvah. The Chafetz Chaim would say, for example, you hire someone to paint your house. So if a person has the right kavana, when you pay that worker, if you have kavana that you're fulfilling mitzvah number 66 of the positive commandments that apply nowadays, the mitzvah of paying a worker on his day, on the day that he does the work for you, so you get a mitzvah. You turn something you're going to do anyways into a mitzvah. You take a cab ride. You pay the worker, that becomes a mitzvah. It's all about being aware of the fact that it is a mitzvah and wanting to turn it into a mitzvah. It's all about putting in that little extra bit of kavana. The Kotzker Rebbe used this idea to explain the Mishnah that we say at the end of Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah from Makos, Mesechus Makos, which says, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Zakos Es Yisrael, Hashem wanted to reward Bnei Yisrael, L'fichach Hir B'lam Tor Mitzvah. So he gave us lots of mitzvahs. So many people ask, it would be a lot easier if Hashem gave us less mitzvahs. And we think the Sheva mitzvahs Bnei Noach, give us seven mitzvahs. Just give us a smaller amount of mitzvahs, it would be a lot easier. 613 mitzvahs is a lot to worry about. The answer is, the Kotzker Rebbe explains, is no, Hashem wanted to give us a life that no matter where I go, no matter what I do, whether I'm on a train, whether I'm on a bus, whether I'm on vacation with my family, whether I'm sitting in my office, wherever I am, I always have opportunities to do mitzvahs. He explained it in the context of, I guess, the times where people were farmers generally. And therefore he said, we have a whole seder of Mishnayos, of Gemara's Yerushalmi, explaining halachos, explaining the laws of Zeruah. A farmer's working in his field, he's planting, he's plowing. There's mitzvahs every step of the way. And that's the idea. That's what we have to do. We have to try to realize that no matter where I am in life, no matter what I'm doing, there's always an opportunity to serve Hashem. There's no place in the world where I could say that Hashem doesn't apply here. As a elementary school teacher, so once a week I teach the 8th grade girls Parsha, and just the other week we were talking about this idea, and I said to them, I said, girls, imagine, next time you go shopping, right, so you're in the mall, and you decide to go to the bathroom, and you're standing outside the bathroom about to make Asher Yatzar. So stop for a second and think that maybe no one in the history of the world has ever made an Asher Yatzar in this place. Maybe you're about to make a bracha to bring some holiness into a place where no one has ever done it before. And it's true about everything in life. No matter where we go, no matter what we do, whether it's making a bracha or davening on a bus or learning Daf Yomi on the way into work, all these opportunities give us the chance to serve God in the way that perhaps no one has ever served God in that place before. And this idea is so fundamental to Judaism. Right? It's the thing that separates us from the Christian beliefs. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky writes in the Sefer on Chumash, that why is it that when we talk about Mishalosh Regalim, we always put it in the context of the physical things that are going on in the world. We describe the produce growing in the field. In Parshat Mishpatim, it describes how the Shalosh Regalim parallel what's going on in the field. It seems like a not very Jewish idea. Is that all the Shalosh Regalim, that our holidays are all about celebrating the fruits of the field, celebrating the new crop? And he says, yeah, that is what it's all about. Because as Jews, that's what we believe. We believe that the physical can become holy. Whether it's planting crops, whether it's sitting down to a meal, whether it's taking a nap, everything I do, if I do it in the right mind frame, if I do it from a Torah perspective, so it becomes holy. And he said that's the difference between Jews and non-Jews. The non-Jewish world thinks that physical things are, you know, if you're a religious thinker, you think that physical things are naturally bad, that they don't offer any holiness, they don't offer any godliness. But we as the Jewish people believe that I can take something which on the surface might be a physical act, it might be something that, you know, could be used in an unholy way, but if I change my whole perspective to it, so it becomes a holy deed. It's so much so a part of Judaism, it's so much so that on Shavuot, right, on the day that we receive the Torah, so what karban do we bring on Shavuot? We bring the Shtei Alechem. We bring a karban, which is food. We bring a karban that we enjoy, that we eat from, right, that the Kohanim eat from. You think, maybe on Shavuot, the holiest day of the year, the day we got the Torah, we want to bring a carbon that's completely for God. We bring carbon ola, an animal that's burnt completely to God. But no, we bring something that people eat from to show exactly this idea. The Kli Chemda says this is exactly the idea. We want to elevate the physical. We want to take something which is physical and say, this is what Torah is all about. It's about taking the physical things and elevating them. In the Rambam Sefer Kedusha, right, so what is holiness? What does the Rambam put in his Sefer Kedusha, in his Mishnah Torah? Kedusha has two major categories. It has the laws of forbidden food, and it has the laws of forbidden and permissible relations between married couples, between husband and wife. That's what Kedusha is, something so physical? And the answer is yes, that is what Kedusha is. As the Jewish people, we believe that if it's something physical, it can be elevated to a holy level. I heard a story once from Rabbi Moshe Weinberger from the Five Towns. There was one night that his young daughter was crying, and he entered her room, and she was in her crib. And from the smell of the room, when he entered the room, he could tell immediately that she very badly needed her diapers to be changed, and he said, I just can't do it. The smell was too strong, he said, I can't, this is not for me, I'm out of here, I can't do it. He woke his wife up, and he said, I need you, I can't, this is just not for me. So what happens? His wife gets out of bed, takes the diaper in her hand, stands by the baby's door, and she says, And he said, it blew his mind. He said, I never thought of it like that. But taking care of my own children could be a mitzvah. Right? When a person looks at it like that, doing a chesed with your wife, with a spouse, with a friend, everything that you would do anyways, you can also add the mitzvah dimension. I don't know if you have to go around making him, muchan mezuman on all your friends every time. Invite someone over for lunch, they come in, him muchan mezuman, right? It might feel a little uncomfortable. But the idea is a very true idea. The idea that I'm able to take things I'm doing anyways, people I'm interacting with anyways, and I can now relate to them in a way that serves God in a way that maybe I hadn't thought of. There's nothing that we do that we can't interact with God. The pasuk says, Shiru lo, zamru lo, sichu b'chol niflosa. The Chafetz Chaim explained, Shiru lo, zamru lo. Sing, you want to sing, you want to dance, do whatever you want. But Shiru lo, just directed towards Hashem. Zamru lo, sichu, you want to talk? Right, Chafetz Chaim loved to talk. Everyone thinks Chafetz Chaim didn't like to talk because he wrote the same for Chafetz Chaim, Shmir Chalashon. He was very careful with his speech. Chafetz Chaim loved to talk, but what? Sichu b'chol niflosa, if you want to talk. So talk about God, talk about holy things. There's nothing a Jew can't do in this world and turn it into a holy act. And I was thinking that perhaps this is the pshat in the pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. The pasuk says, "Umibnei Yisachar yodei bina li'itim, ladas ma yasa Yisrael." Right? The Bnei Yisachar, usually Yisachar represents the Torah scholars, those who study Torah. So the pasuk says, those who study the Torah are yodei bina li'itim. They know the times. So Tzadok HaKohen explains that they know the times, that through the Torah perspective they can see, they can almost predict. Right? There's great stories about rabbis who are able to predict things that were going to happen based on their Torah knowledge. But I thought you could say the following explanation. That Bnei Yisachar, that a true Torah scholar or a true Eved Hashem is the person who's yodeya bina li'itim. A person who realizes that there's different times for different avodas. There's a time for learning, there's a time for davening, there's a time for eating, and there's a time for interacting with other people. And all those things are equally holy, and they can all equally be avodas Hashem if I put it in the right mind frame. There's a beautiful sefer called the Avodas Pnim, and in the sefer he discusses this idea. I just want to read you a few quick lines from the sefer. He writes, "Ein shum minia la'adam me'avodas Hashem yisbarach." There's nothing that prevents a person from serving God. In difficult times, that the avodah changes from time to time. If I'm involved in something, if I'm very involved in something going on at work, so my avodah changes. My avodah is to be honest in my business. If I have more free time, maybe my avodah is to spend more time davening, or spend more time doing a chesed, or spend more time learning. It's all avodas Hashem. It just changes. We change garments. We change. That's the way he describes it. We have, there's different malbushim. We put on different costumes, almost you could say, of how to serve Hashem. And he concludes by saying very strong words. If a king were to command his servant to do a certain act, lasos eiz avoda, and the servant decides I'm going to go off and do something else, so that servant is morid b'malchus. He's rebelling against the king. And so too, it's so true that if it's a time where we're supposed to be with our family, and we try to steal that time away because we think, oh, maybe I'm going to go off in the corner and take Tehillim by myself. Maybe that's what Hashem really wants. So that's not what Hashem really wants. What Hashem really wants is the person who realizes, what does Hashem want from me right now? As he writes at the end here, Yishmo b'libu mahu ratzon Hashem achshav. What does Hashem want at this moment? What is the avodah that Hashem is looking for at this very moment? The Chafetz Chaim has a mimer at the end of one of his svarim. He discusses this idea exactly. The mimer is called something loosely translated as how to elevate everything you do to a holy level. And he describes the following mimer chazal. Chazal say that a person who makes Torah ikar, a person who makes Torah his primary dealings, so that person will be made ikar, that person will be made primary in the world to come. And a person who makes Torah tafel, secondary, so that person will be made secondary in the world to come. The Chafetz Chaim says obviously there's a great difference between a person who's primary in the world to come and a person who's secondary in the world to come. So what does it take, he says? What does it mean to make Torah primary? He says, imagine, there could be a person who sits and learns 18 hours a day, but his Torah is not primary. There could be another person who goes to work every single day, he has a large family to support, and he comes home every night and he has a half hour chavrusa. But he won't miss that chavrusa for anything in the world. That time that he has, or that chesed, that time that he says every week, Thursday night I'm going for a half hour to do at the hospital, he won't miss that, or she won't miss that for anything in the world. So So that person is the person who makes Torah primary. Primary doesn't, it's not about the quantity of time that we're spending in our Avodas Hashem. It's the quality of how I'm living my life. What is more important to me? What do I focus on? What's the highlight of my day? It could be that I'm involved in things that seem mundane all day. But if the highlight of my day is those few minutes of davening, those few minutes of learning, so then my whole day becomes holy. And the Chofetz Chaim goes so far as to say that the Kolo guy, who's sitting and learning 18 hours a day, his Torah may be tougher. He may have more Torah in quantity, but his quality of life, his quality of Avodas Hashem, is considerably less. When Rav Yisrael Salanter got married, Rav Dessler recounts this in his Sefer, when Rav Yisrael Salanter got married, so he made a deal with his wife. In the Yichud room, he said, "We're never going to fight. That's the deal. How are we going to achieve this goal?" He said, very simply, on all spiritual matters, so I have the final say. That's what he said. He said, for all physical matters, you have the final say. So if it's a question of what, you know, should we get a leather couch or should we get a, you know, this color couch? So you have the final say on that. You want to decide on what the blinds should look like, what the curtains should look like, what the tablecloth should look like, you have the final say. On spiritual matters, I have the final say. So his wife said that in the end, what happened? In the end, he had the final say on everything. Why? Because growing up, living in his home, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's home was a home where that everything was a spiritual matter. There's no such thing as a physical matter and a spiritual matter. There's nothing less holy about picking out what color sheets to put on the bed as deciding, you know, how much time to allow him to spend learning in the yeshiva. The Baal Shem Tov writes in his Sefer, Baal Shem Tov Baal Torah, he actually didn't write it, but it's recorded in his Sefer, that if learning Torah, if the things that we learn about brings the light to Hashem, so all the more so a person who does it. If a person learns the halachos of how to be honest in business, so all the more so the person who actually goes to work and is honest in business, right, we think the person who's sitting and learning is obviously serving Hashem in the greater way. It's very often not the case. The person who's doing the mitzvah, the person who's living that gemara that the same person, you know, was sitting and learning in another room, here he is out in the streets of the world living it. So that's the person that Hashem looks down on and says, this is truly an Eved Hashem. Rav Moshe Feinstein's father had a friend, a Rav in Russia, and they made a deal. They said, whoever passes away first, that person's going to come back and tell the other one what really goes on in Shemayim. Come back in a dream after 30 days, tell me what's going on. So Rav Moshe's father's friend passed away, and he came back to Rav Moshe Feinstein's father in a dream, and he told him, he said, everything they say about the heavens is true. It's very difficult. The judgment up there is very serious, and God is very exacting. But he said, you'd be surprised. The hardest part is the fact that Rachmana Libabai, that Hashem desires our hearts. That Hashem desires what goes on in our hearts. Hashem desires, you know, what's the cheshbon? What are we thinking? Why did I choose to do it in a certain way? What am I, you know, what inspired me to act in a certain way? Did I take this opportunity to elevate it, or did I take it as just a regular mundane opportunity, something that comes up all the time? Hashem loves our kavana, and I think part of the problem, part of the reason we don't believe it is because we don't have enough faith in ourselves. I'd like to read you a beautiful line from Rav Tzadok HaKohen, in Lublin. He writes in the Sitka Sasad, "Kishem shetzarech adam lahamin ba'Hashem yisparach, kach tzarech achar kach lahamin ba'atmo." Just like there's a mitzvah to believe in Hashem, there's a mitzvah to believe in yourself. A person has to believe that I'm great. A person has to know what it is to be a Jew, what it means to be born as a Jew. The Baal Shem Tov writes in Parshas Lech Lecha, that the Jewish people we know are compared to the stars. Why are Jewish people compared to the stars? Because very often from down here, the stars look like tiny specks in the sky. But from the heavenly perspective, if we were up in the heavens, the stars would be massive. So too with the Jewish people. The Jewish people at times, we look like we're nothing. We're trampled on. We're destroyed. People do all sorts of horrors against the Jewish people, this small, insignificant, seemingly insignificant nation. But from a heavenly perspective, we're the most elevated people in the world. We're the greatest people in the world. We have no idea who we are. We don't appreciate who we are. We don't appreciate what a mitzvah is. We think that a person who, you know, we try to judge mitzvah. This mitzvah is worth more than the other mitzvah. We have no idea. Hashem judges a mitzvah. We have no idea what a mitzvah is worth. The Be'er Mayim Chaim writes that if we had any clue what a mitzvah was worth, we'd go out of our minds running to, we'd stop eating, we'd stop sleeping, we'd be running nonstop to fulfill even the tiniest mitzvah. Because we have no appreciation, we don't realize who we are as a people. We have no idea how much power we've been given. The Baal Shem Tov said that a non-Jew would never understand the Jew. And you can't even begin to imagine what a Jew is like, what it means to be a Jew. And his grandson took it one step further. He said, a Jew doesn't even understand what it means to be a Jew. Because that's what it's all about. We have no hasaga, we have no understanding of who we really are and what our potential really is. And we fail to realize how the smallest things that we do can have the most profound effect. Just a few more ideas before we finish. There's an unbelievable story that it was one Erev Yom Kippur, and the people in the town in Petach Tikva were all heading up. The Lamji Yeshiva was located in Petach Tikva. Many people would gather there for the Yom Haram, and people were gathering for Kol Nidre. And there was an irreligious Jew walking in the street, and this is his account of what he saw. He said, "I was walking in the street feeling totally unconnected to the day, no connection at all to Judaism, no connection to Yom Kippur. Here everyone else was hustling and bustling along, rushing off to the Kol Nidre service. And here I was walking down the street feeling no connection at all to the day. And suddenly I see someone who looks like an important person, looks like a great rabbi. And alongside, he describes how alongside the yeshiva there were bathrooms. And he sees this rabbi going in and out of the stalls, in and out, in and out, in and out, every single one. So this irreligious man says, this guy should have been at Kol Nidre 10 minutes ago. What's going on? This is obviously an important rabbi. What's going on here?" He couldn't control himself. He goes over and he asks the rabbi, he says, what are you doing? And why are you going in and out of every bathroom? So the rabbi says, as you know, it's Yom Kippur, and there's many people who are going to be in this yeshiva over the next 24 hours. He says, I wanted to make sure that there was enough toilet paper prepared for every single person who's going to be coming in and out. This irreligious Jew said that for every tear of paper that this rabbi tore, so he said it tore his heart. He said that after Yom Kippur, I'm deciding that I'm going to connect myself to this man. And he became a religious Jew. And the story goes on to say, the author who was writing the story goes on to say, think about it. What did this rabbi do? What did he do? He ripped up a couple pieces of paper and he was able to be Makar of a Jew, a person who felt no connection to Yom Kippur, right? A day that even the lowest Jews feel a connection to. This man was inspired because he said, this is what the Jewish people are. This is who they are. This is what a mitzvah is. This is what this man's thinking about. He's not taking care of himself. He's not under his house in a corner in the shul. He's out in the streets on the night of Yom Kippur looking for ways to help others. He says, this is what I want to be. This is who I want to be. There's so many things that we do on a daily basis that if we just take this approach, we can change everything. Think walking down the street, you greet someone. You see someone walking down the street. So we know that Pirkei Avos begins, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai. And the Mefarshim asks, why is this the beginning of Pirkei Avos? Why do we lift the chain of from how Moshe received the Torah from our Sinai, was passed down through the generations? Why is this the opening statement of Pirkei Avos? The answer is that Pirkei Avos, we sometimes think, is just a book of nice ideas. So Rav Avraham Bartzenura explains that this too is from Har Sinai. When when Shammai says in the 15th Mishnah, greet everyone with a smiling face, that's not just a nice idea. That's a halacha. It's no different than any other halacha. It's no different than getting your suit checked for shatness. To greet a person with a smiling face is just as important. It's just as much a halacha. And it's an idea that so many people lose out on. We miss out on it. I read a story once that there were some rabbis who would travel to South America from Eretz Yisrael to serve as mashgichim over a meat processing plant. So the rabbis used to travel every couple weeks, and they would go, they would check the plant, and then they would head back to Eretz Yisrael. So one week, they went to the plant, they were in one of the freezers inspecting the meat, and the door slammed shut behind them. They were trapped in the freezer, and they're banging, and they're screaming, hoping that someone's going to, it's freezing in there. They know their lives are in danger, and they're banging and screaming, no one's coming to the rescue. Meanwhile, on the outside of the plant, all the workers have gone home, and the manager is locking up, and he says to the security guard, he's like, okay, have a good night. Non-religious, non-Jewish man. He says, have a good night. Take care, make sure you lock up, shut the lights. And he says, wait, did you check? You sure there's no one inside? The manager says, no, I did my usual rounds. Just lock the front gate on your way out, and we'll call it a night. He says, no, go back in. I think people are still in there. Okay. So he goes back in. He searches the whole plant. Again, nothing. Comes back out. He says, okay, I'm not sure. Don't worry. It's safe. Everyone's fine. And the security guard is all worked up. He says, no, please go back in. Check one more time. He says, you want to come with me? He says, yeah, let me walk with you. So they walk around the plant. And all of a sudden, the security guard sees the freezer. He says, quickly, open the freezer. They open up the freezer. He finds these three rabbis unconscious on the floor. He gets them out, quickly call an ambulance. The rabbis were saved. So the manager says to the security guard, he says, how did you know? What made you so sure that people were in there? He said, you have to understand, when these rabbis come, every time they come, when they come in, they say hello. When they go out, they ask me how my family is, what's doing, what's new, how's work. He said, I saw the rabbis come in, and they never said goodbye. He said, I know these rabbis all too well. There's no way they left without saying goodbye. I knew something was wrong. So we see that these people, these rabbis, who lived by this, who took this, the words of Pirkei Avos as a halacha, as real life, as an opportunity to elevate the mundane, so these rabbis had their lives saved by it. Just to conclude, the hours, right? We're at the end of the month of Elul now, and we know that the Ben Ish Chai writes that the month of Elul, for every moment we have in the month of Elul, is an opportunity as big as any other month in its own, on its own. Meaning every moment of Elul is equal to a month. We have to capture these last few moments, these last week as we prepare ourselves for Rosh Hashanah. And that's a beautiful opportunity for us to say, you know what, maybe for this week I'm going to try to live my life in this way. I'm going to make the extra effort to elevate the simple things. I'm going to do things from a Torah perspective and look at it in a way maybe that I haven't looked at it before. We know the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says that Hashem taught Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Jewish people are in trouble, He taught Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the slichos that you need to say, this is the tfilos you need to say. It says, Yasu lefanai kaseder hazeh. So the Chafetz Chaim, we'll end with one more word for him on the night of his yahrzeit. The Chafetz Chaim gave the following mashal. He said, imagine there was a manager of a plant, and he had a worker, and he gave the worker a list of things to do that week. So he says, I'll check back in with you in a week from now. You'll let me know how it went, and tell me how everything's going. Comes back a week later, and he says, so, you know, how far did you get on the list? He says, oh, you'll be so proud of me. I did the whole list. You did the whole list? He says, yeah, I did the whole list. Every day, I sat down first thing in the morning, read through the whole list. It's great. You're going to be so proud of me. He says, read through the whole list. You're supposed to do what's on the list. You're not supposed to just read the list. Right? Says the Chafetz Chaim. That's what the Gemara is telling us. Yasu lefanei kaseder hazeh. When we gather here tonight to say slichos, we're not here just saying slichos. Rabbi Leib Chassin said, we don't come to say slichos. He says, everyone says we go to say slichos. We're not here to say slichos. We're here to ask slichos. And we're asking Hashem to forgive us. And if we approach it in this way, so and hopefully we'll take this idea, we'll carry it over with us from now until Rosh Hashanah, that we're not just, it's not just lip service. It's about doing things that are real. Things that we're doing anyways, we can make them all the more real when we approach it in this way. Just a final idea. Rav Baruch of Mezhbush, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, someone once came to him on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, and he said, I hope you're mochel me. So he said, Salachti kedvarecha. Right, you're forgiven according to your words. What does it mean? It means, yeah, as real as your words are, that's how much I forgive you. If your words are real, then I forgive you in a real way. And if your words are just lip service, so then so too my forgiveness is lip service. And I think that's really a message that we should end with. We should realize that every mitzvah we do, as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuvah, we have to view the world as being 50-50. Our single mitzvah could tip the scales, not only for ourselves and our own families, but for all of Kol Yisrael. And I think if we keep these ideas in mind, we should be zocheh this year to a ksiva chesima tova. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you.